A very good morning to you. I'm David Ellis, and I welcome you to this, the Friday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Before I get into the program, let me say that it is with some regret that I am unable to attend the funeral service for the late Vic Buddy Boy Brewster, which is taking place this morning. I again extend condolences to his family, and in particular to his daughter, Jewel. Now, today is Friday, the 27th day of April. On this day, Prime Minister Stewart is either observing or celebrating his 67th birthday. And it is a day after we got the announcement of the date for general elections in Barbados, set for May the 24th, with the 7th of May as nomination day. We're going to start today's program with two people that you know pretty well, but they're not in the studio. They're going to be on the phone with us for a while. I suppose this is the precursor to what is likely to come on Sunday as well, when there will be a further discussion about the politics of Barbados. Peter Wickham, are you there?
Morning. Morning. Hey, morning, David.
Morning, Peter. Yeah. We're trying to hook you up with Glyn Murray. Glyn?
Hi, good morning, David.
Fine.
Hi, Peter.
Well, first of all, let me say it's a pleasure to have you with us, Glyn, because you have been off the scene for a while. I think I should leave it up to you to tell the public what you wish to tell them about your absence.
Yeah. Thank you very much, David. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how are you doing, Glyn? Good to hear you back home.
Yeah, thank you, man. David, I very much welcome this opportunity to rejoin the Starcom family and Brass Tacks. And to those who have been inquiring about my well-being, I just wish to say that I had some surgery and I'm well on my way to recuperation. My recovery has gone exceedingly well, and I would think that I'm weeks away from being fully recovered and be much more active and whatnot. So I just want to let all those know who are concerned that I'm very much in charge of myself. And my body has been responding very well to my physiotherapy and whatnot, so they have no need to concern themselves any further. But thanks for your best wishes and whatnot.
Really a pleasure to have you. And I suspect that you need to allay any suggestion that the delay in calling elections was to give you more time to recuperate.
I wish I could flatter myself to that extent.
Now,
David, before you get into politics per se, I would like you to indulge me if I might make a reference to, you said today is the 27th of April, tomorrow is the 20th of April, National Heroes Day. And just to record my great disappointment and embarrassment at the way Barbados has allowed its celebration of National Heroes Day to descend to the point where it has just become another bank holiday. This will be the 20th anniversary of National Heroes Day, which began in 1998, obviously. And we are doing a disservice and insulting the national heroes who are meant to represent some of the best that Barbados has ever produced as a country. For us to treat them, and they're meant to inspire us and emulate them and seek to copy them and inspire us to do even better than they have done. And to allow the program, which started with great fanfare in 1998, I think sometime thereafter was an attempt to have the program marking the day localized by having some youth groups around Barbados do certain things for certain heroes on that day. But that apart, I think we have done ourselves as a nation a disservice by making what is easily one of the most important days of the world of the year for Barbados. And in fact, it would be the only national holiday that does not have a national program attached to it. And I think we can do far better than that. I just thought I'd like to get that off my chest as soon as possible.
Well, thank you for doing so. Your thoughts on where we are right now as we get ready for general elections, what has taken place in the time that you haven't been here on the air, some of your observations about where the country has been going. And from there, we will have a bit of a discussion between yourself and Peter.
All right. Listening to the program periodically, during the time I was off air, I'd have to say, and reading the paper and keeping abreast of things, listening to the news generally, talking to people, I'd have to say that the country has not gone any further than it had before, really. The country has remained just about the same as it was. We have not, as far as I know, unless I've seen figures from the central bank or whatever, got any worse or much worse. But the point is, there's been no perceptible improvement in our overall national circumstances. A lot of people had to put to say they were awaiting the call of the elections. And now that the elections are here, I think that what we have been having so far from the parties is that there's been a lot of shadow boxing or posturing, etc. But this is the real deal now. The real campaign is on. And from now, from my knowledge of how parties work, having spent many years working in the, as they say, in the engine room of the BLP for these kinds of occasions, I know some candidates, this is when they begin to get nervous because they realize that reality has struck home. I know
somebody's keeping a lot of noise. I'm not so sure what's causing it, but it's a distraction.
It's not at my end.
Yeah, Peter?
Yeah, apologies. I think something was being turned over.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, you were saying.
Yeah, so all in all, the country is poised for the general election. It is each general election is different from each from the other. And so therefore, it'd be nothing new to say that this would be unlike any other. But I think there are a lot of other elements that have come into play since the 2013 election that would make this even more substantially different from those that have gone before, particularly with the use of the social media and whatnot is concerned.
What else would you identify as being different from that campaign in that period?
I mentioned social media because in from what I recall in 2013, Barbadian political parties had just begun to flirt with it for social media. But then so much has happened in the apps and the usage to which it can be put have so mushroomed in the last 5 years. That's a whole different ball game. And I've perceived that, in my view, the social media has been used to carry the unofficial campaign of the party, giving hints of some of the directions in which their campaigning per se will go, about certain issues, about their opponents, pinpointing certain defects or what they call defects of their opponents' campaign or personnel, etc. And that, therefore, is something that we have to watch very, very carefully of how that will go. And all in all, seeking to soften the public's mind, lay certain things subliminally, lay certain issues and hints that certain drops, certain pieces of information, which probably can't be utilized effectively in the mainstream media, in the newspapers, on radio per se. And therefore, we have to see what impact that will have on the whole character of the campaign.
Peter, is that something that you are watching as well? To what extent?
Yeah, no, the media phenomenon is something as well. I think that I was making a point recently that the social media thing actually started probably back in 2007 when it kind of made it clear that in Trinidad and Tobago, that was my first exposure to it during the COP, the election where the COP was doing so well. It kind of created a new dimension, and a dimension which to me often separates the sheep from the goats because it makes it appear as though it is bigger than it really is. And I think that we have to be careful when we look at the social media environment that we appreciate that it's easy to appear big on social media. And the third parties, I think the new parties, benefit a lot from that because they present an image on social media that invariably, when the rubber hits the road, it's an entirely different scenario. So I've been paying keen attention to it because I do know that from this point on where the social media campaign will probably have less than half. If you have a big social media presence and then you have a mass meeting and 6 or 7 people show up, as has been the case with a lot of the UCC meetings, it speaks volumes about the extent to which you're resonating with people. So, but I'm keen on the social media. I think that this campaign is going to be very different largely because it is colored by what happened in the last one and the Barbados Labour Party's attempt to speak to issues unsuccessfully and the Democratic Labour Party's attempt to ability to respond on the ground. And I think that both political parties are aware of that in terms of strengths and weaknesses. And it will create slightly different focus this time around as both of them seek to you know, maximize on the strength and minimize on the weaknesses.
Except, Peter, that given the whole nature and the liberal nature in which by which the social media operate, I what I'm being fearful for it's the extent to which it can be used to mischaracterize, defame, exaggerate people or things, and this, when the damage is already done, then it's already been planted in people's mind. They have to form perceptions, and then how that will therefore help people to make up. It probably make for less rational.
You are introducing the kind of element that social media introduced to the United States campaign, all that they're still discussing right now in the U.S. with respect to the Russian influence. Now, that isn't suggesting that there will be Russian influence, but you are talking more about the impact.
I'm not talking about Russian influence.
I understand that.
What I was talking about mostly is obviously the political parties would have their connection, their operatives, their supporters, using that in an official way, or whatever you want to call it, to get their point across. And to me, that is something that has to be watched very carefully. We also have to look at the point of what about fake news? What is there to prevent that phenomenon to become an issue in Barbados also?
Except that in the case of Barbados, the size of this community is such that it is much easier to counter fake news than across a country the size of the United States.
Yeah, but I wasn't talking about size. I'm very well aware of the limitations of Barbados. The human mind is a human mind, whether it's in the United States, a big country, or in Barbados.
But the ability to counter is what we are talking about. I mean, sometimes if you have a vast area to cover, then the speed with which you can actually, because you're so distracted and you're in so many different parts of the country, but in Barbados, I mean, something comes out on social media immediately, almost immediately. So many people know, and you can actually marshal your response. So that's the counter that is potentially there to that. But
this technology is meant to conquer distance, virtually.
You see that once a leg had a head start, the truth has difficulty catching up.
You can be distracted from a major plank in your platform by having to spend time conquering something which has come out as fake news or whatever. That's the point I'm making. That we too have to be conscious of that possibility.
Fair enough. And you spoke also, though, about the nervousness of this period. No matter how confident people appear on the surface, you suggest that behind in their respective camps, it's a different ball game. Expound on that for us.
I'm saying at the national level, for example, from my experience, a meeting of the campaign committee would have been called, and various aspects that you have to start planning in detail now for things like the launching of the campaign, discussing major meeting sites where you launch a manifesto, you know, where you have all those kind of things, and then if you take that down to the micro level to the constituency level, the constituency branches should have met, their campaign committee should have met with their campaigning committee and discussing the real activity that has to take place. I give it more meaning than had happened.
Peter, in watching that aspect of it unfold, what do you see as potential differences this time around?
It's a challenging thing for me to respond to, because I really do feel that the focus of the conversation right now is elsewhere. My sense is that the campaign commencement has been dropped in the lap of the Barbados Labour Party. The LP was planning a big celebration this weekend, which is followed by the May Day celebration. And I think that for them, they have already focused on they have already focused on big celebrations to celebrate the birth of the leader, to celebrate the National Heroes Day, and the fact that the leader is also a national hero, and to also celebrate the 80th anniversary of the DLC. So to me, it's very easy for them to shift the focus from that to a campaign launch. On Saturday, they have the Ideal Forum on the East Coast to launch their campaign in a fairly major way. That, to me, is the thinking which I feel has really predominated the politics now, that they're looking at conversion. As far as the Democratic Labour Party is concerned, I think the DLP is really looking at the extent to which whether they should try to manage the whole question of the date and the selection of the date. with the commencement of the kickoff of a campaign, you know, the question is whether they should kick off now and lose the advantage of being in this whole period, or whether they should wait for next week. And people suggested that even though they call the election, they're not really ready. So I think that that is really what the two camps are focused on now in terms of looking at. And it is very different from elections in the past because, you know, this one is late. In the past, you've had elections which have been planned. Somebody was making a point about May elections. And I was saying, you know, the 86th election was a June election, and it was a late election. It was an unwise thing because of the whole exam thing. A May election, it was in a way because of the exam thing. Somebody was making the point that 2003 was a late election, was a May election too. It was successful for the BIP. But my thinking is that in this instance, we're dealing with a May election that's late, an election that was due in February. It's being held in May. It's disruptive, and it is also late. So suggesting that you had opportunities to have it earlier, it chose not to. So my question now is, what are the reasons that you have waited this long? And I think that for me is, as an analyst, I'm anxious to hear from the DLP, you know, the logic behind it all. Because I think that's what my mind is focused on. And to me, that's the major difference now.
Let's zero in on the allegation that it is disruptive. Glenn Murray,
yeah.
Do you sense that it is indeed disruptive?
Disruptive of what? The CXE exam?
CXE exam, 11 plus, yeah.
11 plus? No, not 11 plus. The 11 plus is what, May or what? What's the date? May the 7th
or something? This is the question, Glenn. Is it disruptive or not? I mean...
You can't tell me period answer. I'm trying to get clarity.
There's something about, let me say before we go any further, Peter, your line is not as clear as it should be. It is kind of muffled at points. I don't know how you're configured there, but if there's anything you can do to improve the clarity.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. I'll use the
greatly appreciated. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yes, Glenn.
What is the date of 11 plus? 11 plus is May, this in the first week or second week of May? I forget the exact date. It's early May. May Day is next Tuesday.
I've taken 11 plus off the table. The question is it disruptive to the CXE schedule?
It seems it will be, but I believe that those are things that disruption is something that the Ministry of Education can handle and find alternative accommodation. I don't think that is a major issue. I really don't think so.
I beg to differ in the context of a conversation where, as I said earlier, you waited this long to do it and then you're disrupting people's plans. That's my thing. That's my focus.
Yeah, but
and I can't see how that could be lost on people. I honestly can't see.
But you know, the truth of the matter is that at various points there could be disruption. The question is degree of disruption. And I do share the view that I don't see that. A lot depends upon what alternative arrangements can be made by the Ministry of Education for the people who are taking CXE and CSEC exams. But in terms of widespread disruption, it's difficult for me to go with that assessment. Nonetheless, though, we are in a period that many people have had a sense of relief that we are now going to the polls, that an actual date has been set. And it is against that background, therefore, that we will be looking at how the parties respond. Now, Peter made this observation earlier that the Barbados Labour Party has essentially been given a boost by the fact that you announced the elections for them to go down to East Coast and paint a sea of red, as some people want to put it. Is that particularly a particularly strong point for the Barbados Labour Party in your view?
I don't think so, because I think the public is well seized of the fact that the BLP goes to, or has been going to the East Coast Road the last several years, celebrating National Heroes Day, and they always try to get as much red down there as possible. I think it would be boosted by the fact that, because the campaign has not officially been allowed, most people want to come and identify with the Barbados Labour Party for various reasons, rather just as bandwagon jumpers. So in that sense, that will give them a boost. But I don't think that is going to make any difference because that is a well-known Barbados Leopardi stomping ground at this time of the year. But I think they will probably attract additional people who don't want to identify with what they perceive to be a winning party, and therefore that will give some fillip to their numbers further.
Does imagery still matter? I mean, in other words, if you appear, for instance, the BLP seems to have been out first between last night and this morning with posters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. If you add to that, let's say, a good start down at the East Coast Road, because the difference is that this is an election period now. If you add to that kind of imagery, does it matter to come across as though you are ready, you are first, you have things in place?
Well, I think only those two people who look at those minor details. I think the overall impression, and you're talking about perception and optics. Optics do matter, and I don't think that people are going to get any special additional points or with any great deal of votes because you know you got your posters out 2 days before me. Whatnot. Parties will have their supporters who will be proud of that. But at the same time, I think it was just after a while, it turned out to be just another campaign.
You really you believe that? Let me get Peter's assessment of that.
No, I'm finding myself on the opposite side of Glenn for a lot of these questions.
But that's a good thing that you told me to hear today.
People are anxious to see that one party is ready and the other one isn't. The last election, when it was called, the election was called by the Democratic Labour Party. The BLP was first off with posters. No, they didn't win. But ultimately, I think people responded well to the fact that, you know, they appear to have been more ready.
But it mattered in 2008, though. It did register in 2008 when the Dems were out front the next morning and the government was appear to be flat-footed.
Right. And the point, David, is that it may not necessarily mean the difference between victory and defeat. But I certainly feel that people respond well to a presumption that you're ready. And, you know, if it is that the BLP turns the Saturday into a major campaign launch, as it is suspected that they will do, I mean, certainly it resonates well that they're ready. And I think that people look to see those things. You know, they look to see that a party that took so long to call an election appears not to be ready. That, to me, would resonate with people.
Except that campaign launches are never ever take place immediately after the election day is announced. In fact, I agree that if the BLP were to launch their campaign at the East Coast, would that be a novel activity and that they could get some credit for that? I think that would impact well, right? But the posters going up first. Did the BLP put up posters some months ago? They were ready months ago and they put up posters just after a few days. And the rain became very bedraggled and whatnot. And now they have to put a fresh set of posters. So I think that I don't think that really gets very far.
Okay. Now we also talk about the issue of substance. It's one thing to look at the form and whether the image that is presented is going to be relevant. One of the things that I've noted about this campaign, and you can tell me whether you think it is a particularly long one. Because even though we've had some relief about the announcement of the date, it's on the 24th. Mm-hmm. So that's still, you know, given all that has happened already, isn't that a reasonably long period, though, overall, when you look at how long people have been waiting for elections? The actual election period now.
Well, I guess that if you... I'll let Peter go on that first, and I have been...
No, it's long and it's unnecessarily long.
This is
my thing is, if you wait this long, especially into the constitutional period to the discretionary period to call the election, the presumption is that it will be a 2-week campaign, which is the minimum kind of campaign that you need to have.
Who makes that presumption?
But Glenn, if you can let me answer it, right? And my sense is that I find it is too long. I think it is unnecessarily long. My feeling is that if it is that you wanted to put it on the 24th of May, I mean, all up in January when I was writing articles, I was saying that 24th, 28th of May around then seemed to be the logical thing. If this is what you plan to do, why didn't you just call it already? If it is that you're not afraid of a long campaign, you could have named this date for the thing, have people less concerned about all of this thing, and you could have avoided this 2-month period where people were stressing about when it would be. And just tell them when you dissolve Parliament, dissolve it on the day before, and tell them that, look, you know, this is the date you're going to choose. and all the anxiety of the last 2 months would have been avoided. So quite frankly, I think the aspirating all is saying to have such a long campaign, to me, it doesn't make logical sense. And as I said, you've called the election. You've actually called it at a bad time, in the sense that you've not identified. You could have waited another week after this period with Heroes Day and whatnot. Name the date and have the campaign be forced to start after this period. And even though Brian is disagreeing that this is a bump for the BLP, you could have avoided the possibility of a bump. So strategically, it's illogical. It doesn't make sense. And my thing is that you've waited this long, you should have a short campaign. And it was a strategic error, in my opinion. But maybe, like in so many other matters, I'm wrong here too.
Line?
No, I don't think he's wrong. I think you're just being different. You obviously have a different point of view on these things than the Prime Minister, who has the authority to call it. I don't think you're right or wrong. I think Peter is just different. And the Prime Minister has shown that he marches to his own beat, which is the beat of a different drum. And therefore, I come to expect these what might seem unorthodox things from the Prime Minister, because he does not go the traditional route in many of these things. But I will not say he's wrong. To my view, he's not wrong. To my view, he's just keeping in step with his way of thinking. And the Constitution allows for the Prime Minister himself.
It's not a constitutional issue, Blaine. It's a strategic issue.
Yeah, but whether the strategic objective is achieved or not, we will have to wait and see. I think,
yeah, of course.
And we take the point that you have diverging perspectives on it. You know, the way you see it isn't the way the Prime Minister has seen it, and some of his supporters may not, but it is still useful to be able to put the point of view out there, huh?
Yeah, but David, look, we have to be clear on this thing. What this behavior of the Prime Minister is running against 40, 50 years of practice.
Yes, and?
You identify for me another Caribbean country in which any other leader other than him has dissolved parliament without calling an election, and I give you an award because it has never happened.
Okay, but...
It has never happened because everyone but him understands the strategic advantage of going the other way. No, I'm not saying there's nothing unconstitutional. Of course, he has the right to do it. Of course, he has the right to march to the beat of his drum. But I'm just saying that if you're in politics to win, my assumption is that you will take every strategic advantage that is possible, and you will ensure that you do not behave in a way that is strategically disadvantageous. As an analyst, that's what I'm concerned about. It's a legal thing. I'm not about the law.
Okay.
I'm about understanding the strategy that a leader adopts to win. And I have just come through elections in Grenada and Antigua, and both leaders there behaved strategically and did extremely well. And I was challenged to understand the logic behind the behavior of this Prime Minister, which seems to lack strategic advantage and strategic logic. And then somebody telling me about more law, it's not a legal issue. Just tell me how
let me get Glenn's reaction to you.
They've been coming here because they think you're the moderator. I mean, it's somebody. I, Glenn Murray, said it's a matter of the Constitution, so it's somebody. So let's stay focused. The point is, you're talking about strategic and strategy. Those are subjective activities. No, people have different ideas of strategy, different ideas of tactics. So to say strategic doesn't give it any magical value. It is what your judgment tells you at a particular time, whether it'll work or will not work, your advantage or disadvantage. To label it strategic is not to elevate it as going to the moon and coming back. It is that the different way of thinking as to the timing and the implementation of the activity.
So we're going to try to accommodate some calls with trying to have both Glenn Murray and Peter Wickham on, but one of them won't be able to hear simultaneously as the caller is speaking. So we'll try to juggle that as best as we can. Welcome to the caller. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. You're on the air. Call us at 4341-790. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, I want to just correct something that Peter said. He said that that in 2003, the elections were called, the DLP lost, and now they call it again in May. But what he's forgetting, that prior to that, there was an election on the 20th of May 1986, when the DLP won. Another thing, it seems to me that Peter believes that the Prime Minister must operate off his mind and not his own mind. That everything that he does must please him, Peter, and not the Prime Minister. And he seems not to recognize that even though he said that that tomorrow the BLP is celebrating, Why can he think that the Prime Minister is celebrating today too? And that's what you call election yesterday. Have a nice day, sir.
Well, you know, Peter, respond, please.
I don't know if I need to really. I'm happy to pass. Maybe you can ask Blaine to respond.
But he's actually basically saying that the Prime Minister may be celebrating this evening because, as you know, there's some event at the Democratic Labour Party headquarters. Which, I mean, I had suggested to some of my colleagues a few days ago, several days ago, that one had to watch that the Prime Minister was celebrating his birthday on the 27th of April. And, I mean... Perhaps there's a need for us to do some analysis of what we have seen about the Prime Minister's persona over the period that he has been leading Barbados, and to what extent that persona will lead you to come to some conclusions as to how he is likely to react. Glenn, are you back with us? Glenn Marie, are you there? So,
I don't know, David, can I then respond based on that?
Because we
had this conversation yesterday, and I agree with you that we have a major problem, a major difference of opinion. The Prime Minister is of the opinion that he is an asset to the Democratic Labour Party, and as such, making a play on his birthday, a political play, helps to boost the fortunes of the DLP. I disagree, and I think that this is where the challenge is concerned. I honestly think that this is going to be an election campaign where the Democratic Labour Party candidates that are serious are going to try as far as possible to distance themselves from him and from the imagery associated with him as leader.
Can they?
He's the least popular leader that we have had in terms of public
opinion. But how can they distance themselves from him?
Well, I don't know.
The current environment
is a strategy for them to determine. But the point I'm making is that the idea of focusing a campaign around things from the short, like his birthday and so on, makes sense to him, and I get that, and I am not suggesting that Dennis is off target in terms of his analysis. I think Dennis is right in the sense that he believes that the Prime Minister is an asset. The Prime Minister believes that too. The challenge is that I don't believe that there's support for that in anywhere in terms of a reasonable analysis of public opinion. I think that really it is a liability. So to focus on himself more, to me, it helps the opposition.
But you know,
but I also appreciate that that is not a view that will be shared by the likes of Dennis Cameron or the likes of the Prime Minister, as is their right.
Glenn Murray.
Hello?
Yeah, you're there?
Hello?
Yes, that doesn't sound like Glenn.
It sounds like me.
It sounds like you.
Good morning, Miss Ellis.
Yeah, good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm well, and you?
I am good. Happy, be good in body. Yeah, you know, I ain't call really to discuss politics today. I call because I heard a voice. That fine time I heard the voice, I was trying to get in. Because I feel so good this morning to hear Mr. Glenn Murray. And I just called, I would say to wish him nothing more because the way Mr. Murray sung, he's in good health. And I feel good to hear his voice, and I'm hoping that within days I will hear Mr. Harrod's voice also, because these are two great people that I have a lot of respect for. So I really called to say hello to Mr. Murray, and I'm not hearing his voice. His voice gone. Something's wrong?
No, we have a technical challenge here, which we're trying to rectify.
Mr. Murray.
But he's still not on the line in a way you can speak to him directly right now. But we're trying to get
Murray,
him out.
This is your number one Bastard supporter. And we miss your voice. Because I believe in your way of dealing with issues on Bastard. And not people who believe that their way is the right way and everybody else's way is the wrong way. And Mr. Ellis, I would say, you know, I didn't know that. The Prime Minister's birthday was the 27th. So for people for people to believe that the Prime Minister do this for his birthday and this and all that thing, we are so happy and moving on. And you know there are some people out there that believe that this party is in shambles, they're behind time, they're late, they know what they're doing, and all that. Where that come from, Miss Ellis?
I really can't tell you. It can only be based upon the people's interpretation. You remember a lot of what has been spoken of just now was within the realm of what is subjective. So let us understand that we are dealing with politics, and in that context, we are going to be dealing with people's interpretation of what they see and what they hear. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to convince you of your position, of my position, and you may not be able to convince me of your own position. But what we do here is discuss it. And I am sure, I'm trying my best in this period as well to see to what extent we can look at, you know, genuine matters that have come up over time, what we have heard about these matters that suggest to us that we can find solutions to problems. But a lot of the discussion in Barbados about politics seems to be wrapped up in personality. This person is a great person, an outstanding leader, potential great. The other person is an absolute waste of time. And, you know, for me, when you get to that stage, you then have to tie it to actual practices and behaviors and policies before I can buy into your notion that the person is either somebody who is useful or lacking in any use at all.
But I love what you know, say. I mean, I can say it better. What I'm saying is that I followed the American election, Trump and Miss Clinton. And here we had a gentleman who never yet sit in no political office in his life. And a lady who believed that she was it and on top of everything decided that she can concentrate on her stronghold, New York, California, etc. And she forget that there's other people. And then she get big people who I believe should know politics and follow politics, that I wish she get the most votes. It don't work like that.
But this guy, this discussion revolves around Peter's perception that based on the experience that he has had advising politicians and watching politicians in other parts of the Caribbean, that the strategy which has been employed is likely to fail. Now, if you're saying that you want to counter that, yes, it is a subjective assessment based upon his experience, but can you point to a situation in the Caribbean where a completely different approach has been adopted and it didn't fail? That is an approach by the political leader of a party.
Which approach?
Well, you didn't hear what he spoke about earlier?
Well, I'm saying this here. I don't want to connect so much about what Peter said because...
Why is that? You want to dismiss it?
No. This Peter 8 years old. I was listening to Peter 8 years old.
When you were 8 years old? Or when he was...
I was listening to Peter on the short issues for 8 years.
Okay.
And there's nothing that Mr. Short ever say or do that Peter agree with. So to listen to Peter dealing with issues like this is a waste of time where I am concerned. So I will really discuss what Peter said dealing with this prime minister.
So you're more concerned with the messenger than the message?
No. What I'm saying is a person could be speaking the truth, but if there was negative all the time, even the truth would die. That is my belief.
Okay.
There's nothing that Peter could say or do where Mr. Flanders Cho is concerned that I pay any attention to. Because over the time, the years, the way he approached the gentleman in all ways, I don't listen to Peter when he's talking about the Prime Minister. Even if what he said might end up being true, I just put it one side, it comes through one ear and go through the next. He was awfully long ago this morning, and I can't remember anything that he said. And one time, I used to listen to him. But I told him before, and I will repeat it, I don't know how a young man could decide to destroy his whole career over one individual.
But,
and I would like to move on.
But before you go on, whether we agree with you or not in the analysis of his criticism, on what basis do you come to the conclusion that he has destroyed his career because of one man? Where is the evidence of that?
I'm talking about in Barbados. I'm not talking about...
Where is the evidence that he has destroyed his career in Barbados?
I'm speaking about my opinion.
But you should say so. In your opinion.
But I speak on behalf of me all the time.
Well, you didn't get that impression. When you say a man destroyed... If a man has destroyed his career, he never worked for you yet? Listen, he has never worked for you yet. So yes, how could he destroy his career as far as you are concerned in that regard? You never pay him yet?
No.
For nothing?
I love paying him, but I
haven't
seen him
later. Anyhow, the fact of the matter is, you've had your say. He is here. If he so desires...
You are taking it there, not me.
No. We are clear.
We are clear where
you have taken it. And therefore, that is why I stopped you and asked you to clarify on what basis you were making that grand charge.
But Mr. Ellis, I told him that on the air already.
Well, but you having told him that, it doesn't mean that...
He'll represent himself like how you represent
Well, perhaps sometimes you need somebody else to represent you, especially the... Look at you. You come here and defend the Prime Minister all the time.
And not only...
All right, so you recognize only, that there's a time when you need somebody else to represent you.
What I'm saying, I represent now. Between now...
All right, let's move on. What's the other point quickly? Let's move on.
Miss Ellis, I find out that this election... You sit back and study this campaign, good, Miss Ellis.
It hasn't really started yet.
No. Election was to be in December. Those are election is starting. It started everything. You know that the Barbados Labour Party got 29 candidates. And if you really check, you only hear one name. You know, I was talking to some fellas yesterday in a little discussion. You know that they got. I was telling a fellow about 29 candidates, and the fellow said, Mr. Ford. Who is Mr. Ford? I said, you know the BFP got a candidate named Mr. Ford? You know the BFP got a candidate named Mr. Ford?
Caller, may I just say something to you? That this election has got a number of people who are not well known. And it is not only the Barbados Labour Party. The Democratic Labour Party has also got new candidates.
Name one.
Well, Kim Tudor is a new candidate. Henderson Williams
She's
is a new candidate.
Miss Tudor is new.
She's a new candidate. All right.
Miss Tudor.
Look, let us not waste time with that, because you know you have a way of just chasing things. The bottom line I'm putting to you is, look, when you look across the landscape, the same way that you as a Dem will look at the BLP and say that, there are other people who are not Dems, who will look at the Barbados Labour Party, look at the Democratic Labour Party, and also have that kind of difficulty. And then they have Solutions Barbados and other parties out there with relatively new candidates. So I don't know that is any major point. That is just the average political partisan political perspective when you take into consideration the fact that there's so many new candidates around the place. So let's move off of that. I don't know if there's anything that Peter Wickham wants to say, if not on that, on anything else, before we move on. Are you there, Peter?
I'm there. I'm just listening. I don't think that there's anything that I need to respond to. The gentleman has offered a criticism that's consistent with what other people have said, and I've heard it from Dems a lot, and, you know, suffice to say, I continue to work across this region, offering advice to political organizations that think that my opinion is worthy. He doesn't. So suffice to say that it is what it is.
Okay. Before we go any further in this discussion, I want to mention something that I consider important that I may forget. I want to compliment this country's High Commissioner to London for the kind of work that he appears to have done in dealing with this Windrush generation. I must say that it's been a long time since I have seen a Barbados representative abroad with the kind of profile and response that we got from Ambassador, High Commissioner Guy Hewitt. And I think that when you see that kind of response, it is worthy of being singled out for special attention. And I don't know how much has happened in other areas, but on that particular point, I think he has represented Barbados and the Caribbean very well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Yeah, David, just to let you know, I'm back on with you.
Yes, Glenn.
Yeah. If I might just, the issue of whether the possibility that the election might have been called on or wrong or surrounded or influenced by the timing of the Prime Minister's birth date made me remember, when I look over Barbados' political culture, that there was a time when it was widely believed that politicians in general, especially Prime Ministers, when they were going to seek to call an election day, would consult with Obey a man or Obey a woman. No, that's a fact. And there was a well-known character called Racketeer Clark, who it was said was one of the favorite contacts of politicians in general in helping decide the timing of certain events, especially election day.
How difficult, you've been close to Prime Ministers, how difficult has it been in determining when to call an election?
I think that is solely left to the Prime Minister.
We understand that.
Yeah, I mean,
but sometimes a guy, you know, it is his preserve. But you, if you're close enough, you can sense some agony, some difficulty sometimes.
No, I think that Prime Ministers are political animals. They're political. They're practicing politicians, and therefore decisions are made. Every decision made in that regard is meant to give you a political to your political advantage. That is the reality of it. You choose a day and a time, etc., where you think that your party will best benefit from your action.
What do you see?
But can Glenn go further
and explain what he sees as the implications
in the context of this current scenario?
What do you see as the pluses associated with this type of timing?
What do I say that again?
What are the pluses associated with this timing, if any?
What are the pluses with this timing?
Yeah.
Let me answer this way. I would take this opportunity to commend the Barbados Labour Party for generating this near hysteria about the timing, the calling of the election. Okay, it's the point where now elections have been demanded. The people are calling for elections and begging for elections. They got the elections, and now they're calling but haven't gotten the elections and things surrounding it. So I think the BIP has done a very skillful job to whatever pressure it might have generated and how that will play out in the election, whether Mr. Stewart and the BIP will be punished for having been so tardy, so late in calling elections, whether they made it into a round, whether they made it into a nearly a vice or a sin or an immoral act or whatever, is left to be seen. But I think the BLP has done an excellent job in making that an issue.
You are essentially implying that you don't believe there was any validity in complaining about pushing us this far.
No, because, I mean, it was, I think, from somebody sent me some information, I haven't had to double check it, which shows that the How many days from May the 24th would be, how many days left before the expiration of 90?
Well, I think it was 70, it would have been 74 days, I think, in all.
That's about 16.
Two more weeks.
But just let me make my point, Mr. Ricker. Somebody sent me information to make sure that when Mr. Sandiford called the election in 1994, it was 2 days short of the 90-day period. I'm just saying that.
The election was early. It was early, Bill Gray. That election was early. It was a truncated term.
Yeah, but it was a truncated term. But the point is that the constitution still kicked in once the House was dissolved.
Right, but that's not the point. The point is you're talking about a person who has been in power for 5 years and 3 months versus a person who had been in power. I don't even think Sandiford had made 4 years good.
By the 3 months.
Calling an early election and using 90 days is different to calling a late election and using 90
days. You're putting these on. You're putting them on all fours, Glenn?
Hold on. Let me
respond. You're putting them on all fours?
I'm saying whenever an election is called, it's left to the judgment of the person who has the authority.
No, that's not the issue. You said that the Barbados Labour Party, you compliment them for making an issue out of it, essentially suggesting that they were creating hysteria over something because, that did not deserve it. So we are asking
to me personally,
right?
It was not a major issue. It was not an issue. An election had to come, and therefore I fully expected that just like all other prime ministers, this prime minister will use the power is bestowed upon him to call the election where he saw.
Okay, so that's one side of it. And the other side of that now from you, Peter?
No, I just want to get Glenn to answer the question that both you and I asked. Can you answer the question?
He said he answered the question. He saw no difficulty with it.
No, but the question is not that he sees a difficulty with it. That's not much is clear. The question is, why do you think he's done it? What do you think is the strategic advantage that he was talking about, that he has done it, he's exploiting?
I'm not going to delve into strategic advantage because I already made it clear that strategy is left to the subjective judgment of the person involved.
But Glenn, we understand that. But strategy...
analyze the situation.
Right. The issue is that if you call elections early... We can speculate as to what are the factors that could influence an individual to call elections early, as we have done in the past. If you take it late, then we look at the objective conditions prevailing at the time that could make it advantageous to that particular prime minister to call the elections when they call them. Now, do you see any objective conditions that would make the calling of elections on May 24th more advantageous to Prime Minister Stewart than if he'd called those elections earlier?
I would answer that question in this way. The way you say it, that I always felt that the calling of the timing or the quote-unquote late call election was part of a strategy. I hate to use that word in this context, but it was part of an approach where the government was holding on for as long as possible, hoping that it would get a lucky break in the economy, a problem come on stream, that the longer they held on, the greater the chances for something going right for them. Has that turned out to be so. I mean, look at the Hyatt, and things have not turned out to be that way. Look at the Hyatt, look at the BNOC, the oil company, etc. So to me, that was all the fact the longer you stay at the wicket, then let me give you a cricket analogy. The longer you stay at the wicket, the greater your chances of scoring runs. To me, that could be the only advantage. That you hope you stay as long, and that some things that you are hoping will come on stream, which you could then use to bolster your campaigning and your sense of achievement.
You're satisfied.
That is what I've always read.
Fair enough. All right. Do we get another call in? We'll take a break and come right back.